Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte, Big Ten writer. How are we doing, Dustin?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I'm okay. I lost by the Nittany Lions over the weekend in about as tough a manner as possible. But I actually think Penn State fans are walking away from it. I don't want to say encouraged, because that kind of connotates they're looking forward to what's to come, and this was an indicator of that. I think, Dustin, this tough loss to Indiana is just looked at as an independent event that was just a heck of a football game.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you reach a certain point in this season, and maybe Penn State reached that point after the loss to UCLA, or if maybe the following week the loss to Northwestern, where you kind of know your season's off the rails, and obviously you fire James Franklin, just go out and have some fun. And I think that for 59 minutes, Penn State fans had a lot of fun on Saturday, a chance to upset the number two team in the country. They played really, especially in that second half, I thought they played really well. They ran the football effectively and efficiently. I was telling you off the air before we started recording, like, everybody in the Purdue press box was essentially tuned into that game while Ohio State was up 28-3, whatever the score was at the time. It was just a great football game with a unbelievable ending. At this point, if you're Penn State, you just want to have fun and have some highly competitive games. And you just went toe to toe with the number two team in the country that has blown teams out left and right this season.
Well, it's got to make the team feel better about itself and its abilities. And also, to me, what was fascinating about the game, it felt old school, like when you used to go to a college football game, you weren't really thinking about the rankings. You weren't thinking about the playoffs because they didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It was just about winning that game, because in the long run, first of all, it was irrelevant whether Penn State won or lost this game to their season. If you want to talk about bowl eligibility, forget it. Nobody cares about a Penn State going to a bowl game, and I think half the team would opt out anyway. So even if they qualified. And if you think about it from the Indiana standpoint, they're going to be heavily favored in their last couple of games. So they're probably going to finish the season either 12-0, or had they lost this game, 11-1, and they're still a playoff team. So, and if you want to talk, well, getting a bye, well, at 11-1, they would still be in the conference championship game playing Ohio State, and that will determine whether they get the bye or not. So wins and losses were kind of irrelevant in this game. It was just about playing that specific game. And the crowd, it was down a little bit, of course, but it was a phenomenal crowd. It was a tremendous atmosphere, Dustin.
Yeah, that's what it looked like from my, I don't know, how big is this computer monitor? 15-inch Hulu screen that I was watching the game on. this is, in some ways, we probably disagree on this, but in some ways, I think that the playoff has killed the beauty of college football just because of what you just said. I remember I've talked with many people where it was, you went to games and you cared about the game on that day, and bowl eligibility was a big deal. And whether you were undefeated and maybe looking at a national championship, or maybe you were 9-2 at the time or whatever, like the Rose Bowl was a big deal for a lot of teams in the Big Ten. That was the national championship, save Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. Those teams always had higher expectations. So I think that there's I understand everybody wants to be in the playoff picture and wants to be in the hunt for a national championship, but there is a beauty to like the old school college football mentality where it's just like, we have this game on this day and we're going to enjoy the hell out of it. And that's what it felt like. And again, you know, however far away West Lafayette is from State College, that's what it felt like. It just felt like people were having fun. This is all we care about on this Saturday. And we'd love to win this game. I don't even know if I can describe it, but it just had that old school college football feel. I think you hit the nail on the head, and you were there, so you would know.
Yeah, and it wasn't. I do agree with you. Okay, I don't. That's not me wanting to get rid of the playoffs. Okay,
right.
But it was still an aspect of the game where, you know, I go back to. Not only before there were, you know, the playoffs, but before there was even the two team, whatever. I mean, it was, you just angled for the best bowl game, and then you waited till after the bowl games and some random guys, you know, voted. Okay.
Right.
And that's how you had a national champion. And, you know, for example, in 1994, Penn State went undefeated and didn't win a national championship. Okay.
Right.
They did everything they could. So you just enjoyed, you know, that specific game. That's what this was. And I do have to ask you, Dustin, about the last play or the touchdown pass, the last score by Indiana. A lot of hyperbole going on, greatest catch or greatest play ever, that kind of thing. I'm not going to go that far, but it was absolutely an incredible play by the quarterback and an even better play by the receiver. He had no right, none, to get a foot down in the end zone. None. How he did it, I do not know.
Yeah, I don't know either, because when I saw it in real time, it looks clear as day that whatever foot that would have been, his right foot touched first and was out of bounds. And I was like, wow, how did the official miss that? He was right there. And then they slow it down. And I'm like, wow, that official did a great job. Because the way he was able to manipulate his body, contort his body. I was trying to go back and think of like the best catches I've ever seen. It's up there. I don't know if it's the best. And I think situation has a lot to do with that. If that happened and Indiana was down 28-7, people are saying it's a great catch, but nobody cares. You know what I mean? And so that's why I think you go back, and the one that always sticks out to me is that Michael Crabtree catch in it was 2007. Crabtree catches the football along the sidelines, breaks a tackle, gets into the end zone, and they upset number one Texas on essentially the final play of the game. Yeah, I mean, it's up there. And if Indiana has a long run in the playoff, let's say they win a national championship, which, dear God, Jim, please, let's just for my sanity. But if that were to happen, I think people would look back at that specific play and say that was the play that saved Indiana's season. That's maybe a top 10 moment in college football history. I don't know that that's accurate, but I think it would be in the conversation.
There's no doubt it will be part of Indiana football history forever. Mm-hmm. And yes, if they win a national championship and you start seeing highlights, you will see that play 10,000 times. So far, I've only seen it 1,000 times. But
well, I was going to ask, Jim, what is it like? Why? What is it about like the millimeters on a football field between Indiana and Penn State that just seems to create the wrong degree of separation there?
Obviously referencing the pylon game and with Michael Penix. It's a crazy thing. And for Indiana to pull out the game, let me say this about Indiana. I don't see a lot of them. And Mendoza was phenomenal. He was tremendous. They played a great game because Penn State actually played very well. They still have issues. We're still trying to figure out how this offensive line isn't better. You know, they were very good a year ago and everyone coming back, and they're awful at times. We're still trying to figure out how it took till this game for Nick Singleton to contribute. Me personally, I'm still trying to figure out why it took about three or four starts before they let the quarterback throw the ball beyond the line of scrimmage. You know, so they actually started to do some of those things. And, you know, they took the number two team in the country to the wire. So, again, as much as Penn State fans were disappointed with the loss, it was I don't think the Penn State fans are disappointed in their team. I put it this way, Dustin. Penn State lost to Oregon. They lost to UCLA. They lost to Iowa. They lost to Northwestern. This game, Indiana won the game.
Sure. Sure. I think that's fair. And yeah, I mean, there was something to the fact that I think, and whether regardless of how good those teams are, like Penn State still has a lot of talent. I would argue they probably have more talent just in terms of top to bottom than probably Indiana. Indiana just knows how to use it very, very well. And so I thought you just saw a Penn State team play like they had nothing to lose, because they don't. And you can play very loose like that. And then when you get into one of those, especially in the second half, and when you get in one of those grinders, the team that has, with the 12-team playoff, I don't want to say Indiana had everything to lose, but if they lose that game and then suddenly, for whatever reason, they slip up against either Wisconsin or Purdue, it's not going to happen, but just for safety's sake. But if one of those things happen, then all of a sudden they're maybe outside on the outside looking in. So yeah, I think you could feel that pressure, but ultimately, I thought the game was over when Mendoza got sacked. I was like, that's it.
Yes.
That's the end of the ball game. And then he delivers a beautiful throw on, I think it was the following play, on like second and whatever, 20.
Yes.
And he throws it 30 yards down the field. And then my mindset immediately shifted to, Indiana's going to find a way to win this game. So I think you're right. They made the necessary plays. Penn State played extremely well. I didn't think they played overly cautious. I thought it was just a great football game that Indiana made one extra play, and that's how they won.
I had a conversation on our show earlier this week about quarterbacks and something. Some of them have it, whatever it is. And I think that it manifests itself when you have the ball, just get sacked, have 87 yards to go down the field in less than 2 minutes, and you need to score a touchdown for your team to stay undefeated and win the game. That's a career-defining series for Mendoza. He showed he already had it. That was a demonstration of it, though. All right, Dustin, that's it for quarter number one. I understand there was actually some other games played in the Big Ten this weekend. We'll talk about them when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He is Dustin Schutte. Dustin, as I mentioned, there were a couple other games played in the Big Ten. And I'll tell you what, there were some absolute, definitely, no doubt about it, Big Ten type games going on. Before we get to those, though, I do want to ask you about USC against Northwestern. They probably didn't need to do it, but they snuck a backup quarterback into the game as the punter, wearing number 80, the same number as the punter, and they managed to get away with it.
Yeah, they did. And what was, this was explained on social media. I don't know if it made the rounds on like TV or not, but it was explained that basically they had the backup quarterback wear the same number as the punter, but then the penalty actually would have occurred later in the game when the punter took the field with the same jersey number. So the play would have stood. I have never seen that. And Jim, I've got to be honest. I don't know why we don't see it more. I don't know how you would know if you're an official, because USC, like Penn State, does not have the names in the back of the jerseys. So if you are a, I don't know how you would know. There has to be maybe some sort. We have 1,000 staffers on every football team now, so there has to be somebody maybe accounting for that. But even if you did that, I would have, if you do it early enough in the game, I would have somebody on the sideline wearing the same number jersey, and then I would have just, after that play, I would have just taken it off and given the punter a new jersey for that game.
Well, part of it is what I read too. You have to provide the other team, I guess, your roster with the numbers on it.
Okay.
So they did, they slid that in.
They did slide that in.
This guy was wearing number 80. Now, to your point, you know, it's like, I don't know if that was their first punt of the game. So if you gave the punter another number, say 79, and he goes out and kicks as number 79, someone's going to make note of that. And then when number 80 comes in, and you're right, also the fact that USC didn't wear their names on the jersey. So I guess if you pointed out that the penalty would be when the punter, the actual punter, came in with that number, that was the duplicate number to play the same position, that's when the penalty should have been drawn. And you know, part of this too is in college, you have duplicate numbers because there's so many guys on the roster, and it's typically, you know, it's how you know, Penn State has a speedy defensive back wearing number 16, the same as Khalil Dinkins, the starting tight end. And if he make a kickoff return or a punt return, and announcers are saying, oh, tight end Khalil Dinkins with the return, because, you know, the announcers don't know who is who on the roster. But yeah, this is one of those things that, it, what amazes me is they tried it against Northwestern. I don't think USC should need this against Northwestern. If you got it in your hip pocket, save it for a game. Save it for Oregon in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that's fair. Maybe they didn't think they could get away with it in another game. I don't know. I thought that, you know, when I heard about it, I thought it was kind of funny, if I'm being honest. Because, again, I don't know how you would know. And then at that same – now, I know there's field position here to think about. But at the same time, like, if from my understanding – I did not see this game. I was at the basketball game, so I didn't see. But my understanding was that that fake play happened – that was the first time they sent the special teams out of the game. So even if they did get flagged for it, Jim, they're already in a punting situation. Oh, no, we have to punt. We were already going to punt. So you might as well take that risk if you're going to do it early enough in the game. I don't know. It was interesting. I'm sure there will be some sort of loophole that gets tried to be, you know, gets closed somehow. I don't know. But, yeah, it was similar last year to, like, Oregon and Ohio State. Didn't they send too many men onto the field in the final couple seconds to try to prevent Ohio State from picking up a lot of yards, and it was only a 5-yard penalty or something. I remember that was a big deal too. So coaches are getting smarter with these loopholes.
I think it was also Wisconsin a few years back. I think it was at the end of the half with seconds left. They're kicking off and their players would intentionally be offsides to get a quicker start, you know, and if a flag gets called, okay, fine. You just run more clock off by doing that. And I thought of that in a game, and I can't remember which game it was, where a defensive player was offsides or jumped early making a play, and the clock starts. So hey, maybe that's a good way, you know, to prevent a big play, as you said. And worst case, we give up 5 yards, but some clock gets run off. So there are those kind of loopholes. Let's get to a couple other games. And, Dustin, there were two – the definition of a Big Ten game, Oregon, Iowa, and Washington, Wisconsin. Let's start with Oregon, Iowa. Oregon comes out with the win, had a nice late drive. The field goal kicker has one of the greatest names in college football. Kicks the game-winning field goal with 3 seconds left, and Oregon escapes with an 18-16 win. It was cold and rainy. Was there anything more quintessential Big Ten football than that game?
No, especially not when you're talking about field goals in Iowa City. That's the biggest thing right there. And it was funny because my fiance actually texted me because I was obviously in Indiana all week, and she was kind of keeping me up to date on some of the football happenings, because most of my week was spent covering basketball. We were talking about the Oregon Iowa game. She says, well, it's in Iowa City. It's supposed to be nasty weather. I don't remember. Was that a midday game? Was that maybe a 3:30 game or something? I don't remember what time the game was. It might've been noon. I don't remember.
It wasn't noon, because I actually saw the end. So maybe it was late afternoon window. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I thought it was later in the day. but I mean, yeah, Oregon, maybe their second, and I'd have to go back and think, but I was going to say maybe it's their second introduction to Big Ten football. Their first was last year when they played Wisconsin in November and got I don't know that it was raining, but it was awfully cold. And Wisconsin was in a game that they had no business being part of for 50 minutes last year. So yeah, this is what you get in November. You gotta throw it all out. And this is why you have to have, no matter how prolific your passing attack is, you have to have a solid ground game for afternoons like this in the Big Ten.
And this is why teams up north want a team in the South to come north. And
in November.
In November. Well, that's why, you know, the playoffs are so great. You could end up, you know, we saw with SMU, not a Southeast Conference team, but a team from Texas coming up to Happy Valley in one of the coldest December days going. And by the way, that name is Atticus Sappington.
Yeah, it's a great name. Their running back, Noah Whittington, good name too.
So Oregon wins the all-name award, but that's a real test kind of game for them. Washington, on the other hand, went into Wisconsin, cold rain. I guess it was even sleet or snow going on in that one, and Washington did not escape that game with a win. And I didn't see the game, but I did look at the box score. Wisconsin threw the ball for a grand total of 48 yards, Dustin. 48 yards. Four different players threw passes. And their punter, I'm assuming fake punt, not no number shenanigans going on. But their punter was 1 for 1 for 24 yards, which means he accounted for half the passing yards.
Just an amazing stat line there. I mean, yeah, I also didn't see this game, so I can't talk a lot about it. I thought Washington was a pretty good football team, but this is just another indication of, again, a team going, and we could have mentioned this with Oregon, team going cross country, ugly weather, having to play Big Ten. It's not like Seattle's got ideal weather conditions ever. So you'd think they'd be a little bit more accustomed to it, but I don't. Yeah, that was of all the results from the weekend, that was the most shocking.
It was, but it's also a case, not just the travel, which we saw, you know, the West Coast teams in the Big Ten have created this extra dimension, whether it's East Coast going to West or the West Coast teams coming East. So you throw in then cold, rain, it just – Wisconsin, a team that plays best when it plays ugly. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they were part of the black and blue division of the Big Ten. You go in there, that's the kind of thing that's going to happen. Just like what happened in Iowa, Oregon escaped, but they just barely escaped with their life. And nobody in those two games, the four teams, none of them hit the 20-point mark. So that's an advantage underdog.
Yeah, that's how both of those teams would like to win games, just defensively and through special teams. I tell you what, Jim, I will say that as much as we give Iowa a hard time, they are a field goal against Oregon, a late touchdown drive against Indiana, and again, another field goal against Iowa State. I mean, they've lost three games by a grand total of 10 points. That is a really good football team, and if a few plays go their way, they're in the playoff conversation. Like this, that talk about heartbreak central.
But you could also go the other way. They were a 1-point winner against Penn State.
Yeah, true. That's fair.
So when you're playing games that way with that kind of score, whichever way it goes, you could pick out one or two plays. You know, Penn State is still lamenting, you know, the late in the first half fumble and a defensive holding that occurred well away from the play on a third down sack. And both those plays led to points. So, you know, you get a close game, you could always cherry pick one or two plays. That makes all the difference. All right, Dustin, that's going to be it for quarter number two. When we come back, let's take a look at the national picture and maybe even a little sneak peek into the playoffs. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number three. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. Dustin, we still have the national picture to look at. We've reached November. We're now to the point where we have the playoff committee coming out with its rankings. Things are starting to clear up a little bit in some places. Some places just a cluster like the ACC.
Yeah, especially after this weekend when both Louisville and Virginia lose. So that creates a little bit of a cluster. I don't know. Miami got a win, but they had a couple tough losses. So that is starting to look more and more. I think at one point I said there could be two teams from the ACC that got in, depending on how Virginia, Louisville, Miami, how that kind of played out. I think that is now probably a one-bid league. Whoever wins the conference championship is getting in, and that's probably it.
Oh, yeah. I took a quick look at it. There's five teams with one loss. Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pitt, SMU, and Duke. Louisville and Miami each has two losses. And if you put a gun to people's head, they'd probably say that Louisville and Miami are better than those five teams,
yeah,
or at least four out of the five. And I took a quick look at the remaining schedules for these teams. Duke, by the way, you know, they're 5-4, but They only have one loss in conference. They lost to UConn.
How about that?
Which
the UConn, you know, the UConn Huskies, Jim Mora has revitalized that program.
It's crazy. But, you know, you're going to have some of these teams play each other in elimination games. Virginia has to play Duke. Pitt has to play Georgia Tech. SMU, they still have Louisville on their schedule. So, you know, they're going to start eliminating each other. What's fun is Georgia Tech also plays Pitt. So, and that will eliminate one of those two teams. But what's interesting is, remember, Georgia Tech, who might be in the best position, they still have to play Georgia, though.
Yeah, they do. They almost won that game last year. I like Georgia Tech a lot, actually, this season. I know they're ranked 17. They don't have a great win on their resume. Let me just say that. So we talked about earlier, and this has nothing to do really with the playoff, but we talked about, you know, just having that old school college football feel, the Penn State Indiana game, how you just kind of went in and it was all focused on that game. Nothing about the playoff, nothing about bowl eligibility, just beat Indiana. The ACC is the reason, and this was the case for the Big 12 last year, is the reason why I love the 12-team playoff. You've got a lot of teams that every week are playing for something, and only one of those teams is going to get a bid. And you have, what you just said, like five teams competing for two spots in the championship game. That's awesome. Like that makes it a lot of fun. I almost wish I covered a team in the ACC. Because the big, like right now, the Big Ten, I don't know what the SEC picture is like, but the Big Ten is basically down to, it's basically two teams, unless something unbelievable happens down the stretch. We're talking about two teams, and we're 3 weeks away from the Big Ten championship, and we know who's going to be playing in it. The ACC, we have no idea. That is so fun to me.
Oh, it is. I of course want everybody to have two conference losses and have the absolute craziest, you know, seven team
tiebreaker,
you know, to see how they try to figure that out. And no, I have no idea what their 17 tiebreaker is. I don't know if ultimately it comes down to rankings, margin of victory, games within, you know. Could you see though if it's games within the teams that are tied? Because again, these conferences are so big. If you had five, six, seven teams, you know, tied, they may not have, one team might have two games against that group. Someone else might have five games against that group.
Right.
So how do you pick, you know, this team is 4-1, that team is 1-0 against the group.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So I you know, that's the chaos though that we all love. And you know, the ACC, you're right, at the start of the year, what's fascinating too is I named a total of seven teams when you include Louisville and Miami, and the two teams that aren't part of that are Florida State and Clemson.
Who would have thought that at the beginning of the season? Well, I don't think anybody was all high on Florida State until they beat Alabama. But yeah, I mean, they're 4-5. They won one ACC game. How embarrassing for Alabama.
Yes. So when you have that, you know, SEC, I just assume anyone talking SEC trash is Paul Feinbaum. If it isn't, it could have been. But there's the Indiana would be about a 500 team in the Southeast Conference.
False.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to go by that, Alabama would go winless in the ACC based on what we've seen.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they can't beat the third worst team in the ACC. Terrible.
Exactly. We'll get to the Southeast Conference, but I do want to hit the Big 12. Texas Tech really, I think, showed themselves to be for real. They blew out, essentially, Texas Tech blew out BYU, battle of two top 10 teams, which is crazy to think about. But in looking at that conference, It could. Well, my first instinct was we're going to see Texas Tech play BYU again in the conference championship game, except BYU has Cincinnati on their schedule.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's going to be the elimination game. The winner of that game will play Texas Tech.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd have to look. Let's see real quick. Yeah, because Cincinnati played – well, Arizona provides a test, and then TCU – Cincinnati's schedule is not easy. But I think that that does go a long way in maybe we get a rematch.
If BYU wins that game, it'll be a BYU-Texas Tech rematch. Texas Tech plays UCF in West Virginia.
So they should be just fine. The Cincinnati one that's a tough one. So I don't know. Yeah, Yeah. I think we're probably going to get a rematch, but Cincinnati's been sneaky good this season. The only other loss they had was in week one to Nebraska. And that's Nebraska's 7-3. So it's not like that's a terrible loss.
Right. So but it's still crazy. But I think Texas Tech appears to be in the driver's seat. That could be a rematch. But don't you picture, again, that's a one playoff team conference.
Probably so. But this is where I'm trying to do the math, though. Where would that put us in terms? Because I don't know. Who are you putting in the Big Ten? I think they've got three teams. So would we say that that's – let's see, 1, 2, 5, and then you got your one group of five teams, so that's six. Who are the other six teams getting into? Well, you know what? Actually, we just need eight teams this year. That's all we need is eight teams in the playoff.
Well, I think that it should be like every Southeast Conference team should make it, and they should expand to 24 teams and just put every one of them in. So it's like you've got your group of five team, right?
Yep.
Notre Dame.
Yep. As long as they take care of business. Yep.
In the Big Ten, you're going to have Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon, right?
Yep.
You'll have your Big 12 winner, for sake of argument, let's say Texas Tech. Your ACC one team, for sake of argument, let's just say who the hell knows.
Yeah.
For the ACC, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, which allows us five Southeast Conference teams.
Woof. Okay, so I'm going to scroll down here. I think we should put UConn in. just for this. Okay, so let's see. Yeah, you know what? I'm looking through it right now. 1, 2. I would give them four. I would give them four teams. Ole Miss, Georgia, Alabama, and Texas A&M right now. Maybe Texas will get in but I don't think Texas is that good. Oklahoma got wiped by Texas.
See, I think you're going to have a situation where among Texas, Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma, they'll kind of sort itself out. I was looking, let me see if I have this. I thought I had some of their schedule. Let's see. I don't have it in front of me, but you have Oklahoma. Come on, Jim. I know I was writing myself some notes, and I'm not sure where I put them right now. I'll get it together for the fourth quarter. But I think those three teams – whoever finishes with just two losses among those three and the best. Now, I think there are some games where, Texas has to play Texas A&M. Okay.
Right.
If they win that game, you'd probably say they deserve it. One conference loss, two total losses, right?
Right.
And a win against an undefeated Texas A&M team. Vanderbilt, looking at their schedule, they have to play Tennessee yet. They have Kentucky and Tennessee. So, you know, could they come out of that? Theoretically, they could come out with still two losses. And then who do we have left? Oklahoma. you know, this is riveting radio. listening to me try to find these schedules, but Oklahoma has left.
We're going to just start playing the Jeopardy sound.
They play Alabama yet.
Okay. Well, here's what I'll say. So you can say maybe the SEC gets five. There are two wild card situations in the Big Ten. And those two wild card teams would be one, Michigan, because they still have they'll play Maryland and Northwestern, or Northwestern, then Maryland, and then they'll finish the season against Ohio State. So if Michigan sends...
If they could beat Ohio State.
Ohio State, they're in the mix. And then you look at USC, who finishes the season with a ranked Iowa team, a ranked Oregon team.
I'll tell you what, don't finish your thought. Hold it for when we come back, Dustin, right after this.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. We're looking at some playoff configurations. Dustin, let's talk about, you know, the Big Ten. And you were starting to talk about Michigan's opportunity.
Yeah, well, Michigan, so when you look at their schedule, it is very favorable in terms of a potential path to the playoff and even potentially still, Jim, the Big Ten championship game. Because if they, assuming they take care of Northwestern and Maryland, if they beat Ohio State head-to-head, aren't they in the mix? I mean, they would be firmly in the mix. Now, I don't know how the tiebreaker works, but would be between Ohio State, Michigan, and Oregon at that point. But Michigan, right then, if they beat Ohio State, they're sitting at 10-2, and they're a legitimate playoff contender because they would have presumably beat the number one team in the country. The other one that interests me is if you look at USC's schedule, and they have the losses to Notre Dame in South Bend and the last-second field goal loss to Illinois in Champaign. But I don't think they can get to the Big Ten championship game because they have two losses. But they still play Iowa, which is ranked number 20, and they still play Oregon, ranked number 19, and then close out the season with UCLA. So if Lincoln Riley can find a little magic there and go 3-0, put them at 10-2, there might be enough meat on that schedule to get a fourth Big Ten team in there. But it has to be one of those two. There is nobody else that's in the mix.
Right. Everyone else, USC has two losses overall, one loss in the conference. Oregon has one loss total and one loss in the conference. Now, you know, say USC somehow sneaks in by beating Oregon and sneaks into the conference championship game, they would need Ohio State to lose. I don't know what the tiebreaker is, but they can't lose in the conference championship game either because that would be a third loss. I think the best route for Michigan is obviously they upset Ohio State, but don't make the conference championship game because then they'll be a 10-2 team with a great victory against the number one team in the country.
That would be the case for both USC and Michigan, I think, wouldn't it?
Yes. Now, USC, if they beat Oregon, yep, they have one loss, but they need some help because right now would be Indiana and Ohio State playing in the conference championship game, counting on Ohio State to beat Michigan.
I think I legitimately think the best chance is USC. I don't think Michigan's good enough to beat Ohio State, and the fact that Michigan's been really banged up. Now they had a couple. Now they'll have a couple weeks to get Justice Haynes back and Cole Sullivan back. So maybe they have an outside shot. I just don't think they're going to beat Ohio State. Of course, I've said this each of the last five freaking years, Jim, and look at how far that's gotten me. But USC can beat Iowa, especially at home. I think Oregon's very beatable. I think they're more beatable this year than they have been in recent seasons. So if USC goes undefeated, and then you're crossing your fingers and your toes that Indiana and Ohio State both go undefeated, so you just get to rest, kick your feet up at 10-2 with a couple ranked wins on your resume. You only have one conference loss. The only other loss on your resume is a Notre Dame team, which if they went out, Jim, you already said probably a playoff team. It would be really hard to keep USC out, in my opinion.
Just because I want, just like we want chaos in the conferences, Dustin, I want chaos in the playoffs also. What I really want to see is, do you get a fifth Southeast Conference team with two losses versus the fourth place Big Ten team with two losses?
Yeah.
Someone is going to go crazy. And I love that, by the way.
Someone is going to go crazy. I wonder, this didn't happen last year because I still think the argument for a one loss Indiana versus a three loss Alabama was too much to ignore. But if you have USC and Ole Miss or whoever it might be, whoever that fourth, I'm going to use Ole Miss as the example, or say those four get in. I'm trying to do the math in my head. Vanderbilt, let's say it's Vanderbilt. I'm just going to throw that out there. Don't you think if you're the committee, you say, gee, we could have national brand Big Ten USC from California, or we can have little old Vanderbilt in our 12-team playoff. I have to think that the television ratings and the television networks are going to be like, maybe we should give that bump to USC. I still believe that's a factor.
I think it is, but I think Oklahoma, I believe that fourth or fifth, potential fifth team, because Ole Miss has an easy schedule the rest of the way.
Right.
So I believe A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss are in, okay, no matter what.
Yeah.
It's among Texas, Vanderbilt, and Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma has a tough schedule the rest of the way. Vanderbilt still has Tennessee. I'm not, sure about that. Texas has Texas A&M. If Texas beats A&M, an undefeated A&M, I think Texas becomes that 15 from the Southeast Conference over USC as the fourth team.
That's probably fair because Texas has a massive brand too. So I think that's probably a good call on your part.
Well, let me ask you this question. A commissioner's going to go crazy. Would you rather see Greg Sankey or Tony Petitti go crazy?
Greg Sankey, just because I think he ruins everything he touches. But that's just me. Like, legitimately, Jim, I've never been more tired of somebody complaining than I am of Greg Sankey. And it's just like the thing that really – I mean, it happened a long time ago, but the thing that really – drove me nuts. I think it was over the summer or maybe just before the fall. Just before the fall would still be summer, Dustin. Before the start of the college football season, he had basically been clamoring about, well, we want strength of schedule to be a bigger factor. Here's how you tell what the strength of schedule looks like, and was like trying to pawn off his biased formula that clearly favored the SEC. And so I would rather see him go crazy, but I have a feeling the ACC is going to be the one. Tony Petitti would be the one that goes crazy. I got it mixed up. Jim, it's a Monday. It's we're recording this early. I can't get my thoughts straight. Tony Petitti would go crazy. He's not. I don't think he's quite as animated, bombastic. as Greg Sankey either. But I was thinking in my head, I was thinking of Jim Phillips, and he's just so subdued that I don't think even him going crazy would be a blip on the radar.
Well, both the ACC and the Big 12, I don't think have done anything. They could hang their hat on one of the worst teams, Florida State, beating Alabama.
That's true.
You know, as their argument for more than one team. But I don't think it matters. I think, you know, those two conferences, you will get one team and you will like it. You know,
yeah.
You get one team and you'll thank us for it. But I think the Southeast Conference is just going to, you know, they spent the entire offseason lobbying for this.
Yep. Right.
And a year ago, that lobbying for three-loss Alabama versus one-loss Indiana, just them throwing the argument out there makes them say this year, well, then a two-loss Southeast Conference team versus two-loss anywhere else, you obviously have to give it to the Southeast Conference. And let's face it, the Big Ten – it did nothing to change that argument. I blame Penn State. I mean, Penn State should have been the fourth team, you know, on this season.
Well, I mean, I think if you go look, and I don't know that this hasn't always been the case, but I think this year, if you just look like outside of like the bottom of the Big Ten is so bad. And I think that's what's working against them. Like, even UCLA has three conference wins. That's a bad football team. Like, they're not good. So you have, from UCLA down, you have UCLA, Rutgers, Maryland, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Penn State, and Purdue. That's seven teams that I would legitimately say are bad football teams. That's seven out of an 18-team league. That's over a third of your league is, as I would describe it, bad. So when you have some of these other teams that just beat up on bad football teams, I think that's part of the problem. Now, I think the SEC has some bad teams, but I think they are more stable in the middle. Like, you look at, you could make the argument, like, I think Nebraska, most of their losses have been, all of their losses have been one score or close, but then Minnesota got railroaded by Ohio State and Iowa. So some of these teams that are in the middle just don't even put up a fight against some of your top tier teams. And I think if some of those games were a little bit more competitive, then maybe you can make an argument, but a lot of these games just haven't been competitive in the Big Ten. And that really hurts the perception that you are a deep conference, because the Big Ten just isn't this year.
Well, and also I blame Penn State for a lot of this. Okay. Their losses to UCLA, to Northwestern, and even to Iowa, they should have not happened.
Right.
There's no way those should have happened. You know, Penn State has no one to blame but themselves. But, you know, with those wins, you put Penn State, you know, where they belong, I'll say it that way, which sounds wrong, but that would be the case. And, you know, UCLA would not have three wins in the conference, did have two. Same thing with Northwestern and Iowa. Instead of being 4-2 and a ranked team, they'd be 3-3 and not ranked. You know, it would put everything where it should have been. So I think Penn State should take responsibility for the perception of the Big Ten also, where you expected them going into the season to be one of those, along with Indiana still surprised me. I think we all thought, hey, that's maybe a 10-2 team. But, you know, hey, credit to them and Kurt Schiracca. This is now two seasons in a row.
Yeah, I mean, they've done an excellent job. And, you know, we'll see what happens in the Big Ten championship game. But they've certainly proved that they belong. They've rewritten. They're now a football school, Jim. And I don't know that I ever saw that coming.
Just real quick, I bumped into some Indiana people who took a private jet in and were right after the game taking a private jet out to go see the Indiana basketball team.
Oh, geez. Okay. Yep.
That's living.
That is living.
All right, that is it, the final word. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.